Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday. What is today? The 28th of August. We're happy to have Dean Kuntz with us this hour. He is the author of a wonderful book about his dog, A Big Little Life, A Memoir of a Joyful Dog. He, of course, is a huge best-selling author. His books include One Door Away from Heaven, From the Corner of His Eye, Midnight, Cold Fire, The Bad Place, Hideaway, Dragon Tears, Intensity, Soul Survivor, The Husband, and Odd Hours, and many, many others. He writes early in the book about the dog that he and Gerda lived with for quite a number of years, and it's an interesting story of how they got Gerda as well. In each little life, he writes, we can see great truth and beauty, and in each little life, we glimpse the way of things in the universe. If we allow ourselves to be enchanted by the beauty of the ordinary, we begin to see that all things are extraordinary. If we allow ourselves to be humbled by what we do not and cannot know, in our humility, we are exalted. If we allow ourselves to recognize the mystery and the wonder of existence, our fogged minds clear. Thinking clearly, we follow wonder to awe, and in a state of awe, we are as true to true wisdom as we will ever be. Trixie was innocent and joyful, but also at times enigmatic and solemn. I learned as much from this good dog as from all my years in school. Dean likes radio. He doesn't like to do many other kinds of interviews. He's a little publicity shy, but he loves, he says, the intelligence of people in this medium. That's a compliment to you folks, so that's why he's with us. Dean, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me there.
Well, I just cry when I read this, and I cried with my doggy who was with me, and I'm so glad you had Trixie in your life, aren't you? You must be so glad. What an incredible dog.
And it was, just one of those things we'd been talking about, having a dog for years. We'd never had dogs, but we'd worked with these groups that train dogs for wonderful purposes, and finally we kept saying to each other, we're so busy, we don't have time for a dog. We intuited that it would be like having a child and it would require a lot of time, and so we just kept delaying, and one day I said to Gerda, you know, we're going to be 90 saying we're too busy to have a dog, so we just better do this while we can, and that it became such a wonderful thing in our lives and changed us in many ways and changed me fundamentally in my approach to my work was just an amazing discovery, and she was quite a magical little being.
And she was also a bit of an author, wasn't she?
She was. Mm-hmm. I had so much fun sort of imagining things from Trixie's point of view that I started in our snail mail newsletter and in notes to friends and stuff, sending little correspondences from Trixie she started reviewing my books in this in our newsletter, and she would never give me five full bones. She would give me four bones or four and a half bones. Four and a half was when there was a dog in the story, a friend of mine in publishing saw this and said, you know, I think we could do a book like this, and that was a book eventually called Life is Good. I thought she had lost her mind because I said, well, who would want these little observations from the point of view of a dog? But they did. She put it together with pictures. And Life is Good was Trixie's first hardcover, and it outsold my first hardcover 16-1.
No.
Yeah, there was a lot of envy percolating in the Coons house.
Ooh, so what did she get for the treat?
Well, you know, I told her I gave her book a four-and-a-half-bone review, but I'm paying back on that. And for treats, well, you know, she got whatever I thought she deserved that day, and that was usually more than she should have had.
Right. So tell me how you found her. This organization you were volunteering with, you and your wife, is an extraordinary group, and she came to you an extraordinary dog already when you first got her.
She was trained by Canine Companions for Independence, which is a group that trains dogs to serve with the people with physical disabilities, quadriplegics, paraplegics, children with spina bifida. They do had at one point 89 different commands they know, and these commands can be put together in different ways to get tasks done. And many people who could not be on their own because of the limitations of their disability suddenly can be with one of these dogs, and it's really life-transforming. And we had been working with them for many years, and they kept saying, take one of our release dogs, which means a dog that goes through the training but maybe doesn't finish the whole 24 months because there's something they can't make the dog work right with. It might, for instance, be distracted by birds or rabbits or other dogs, and they can't break it. If that, then it can't be an assistance dog. But Trixie went through the whole 24 months, and she went into service with a beautiful young woman in L.A. who lost both legs in a traffic accident. And she went through, this woman was becoming a teacher, so Trixie was with her during her student teaching. And then one day, Trixie started limping, and it turned out she needed elbow surgery. She had a congenital problem. And once a dog has joint surgery, it can no longer be in service because it ordinarily would not pull the wheelchair. But in a pinch, it has to be able to if something happens to the person in it. Mm-hmm. And so Trixie needed a home, and it was just at the right moment when we were saying at last, we are willing to take one of these dogs.
So it was because you were thinking about, I know you're far from 90, but it was the thought, hey, we're going to be 90 and we will never have had the dog. Was that thought that made you at that moment take her in?
Yeah, I think it was, we've always been to some degree workaholics, and it was just that right. moment of, all right, we better do this. I knew it would also, when we did it, it would also in a way change the rhythms of our lives, and we were in need of that change. And she definitely did change everything when she came into it.
Right. You know, when you write about the early years in your life, he had an alcoholic father. He was cavorting with female wrestlers. What a bizarre story that is. I kept thinking as I was reading that part of your book, Dean, I wish you had had a dog then.
Well, you know, I don't write about it in a book because it's off track. There were two brief dogs in my life.
Were there?
My father brought home a dog. He was... thought he'd trained to be a hunting dog, and it only survived at our place for about a month. I was 5 years old, and my mother looked out the window one day and saw that the dog, not attempting to kill me, just wanting to play, had wrapped its chain around my neck and was strangling me.
Oh.
And I wept and wailed and tried to keep that dog there. It was called Tiny, but it weighed 120 pounds.
Oh.
But the dog had to go, so it was... They came and went twice in my life very briefly, but I had an aunt who had a wonderful Cocker Spaniel, and so it's probably where my love of dogs came from, was from that Cocker Spaniel.
Right. And when you say you needed to change the rhythm of your lives, what are you talking about?
Well, I've always been, I think it came out of having a father who was an alcoholic and violent, held 44 jobs in 34 years because he kept punching people out, which is a bad career move. And,
yeah.
Especially if they're your boss. And so I sort of rebelled in many ways against that. And one of the things I've done in my life is I often think, what would my father do in this situation? Then if I do 180 degrees the opposite, I know I'll be all right. Mm. And I probably have gone overboard in the amount of work I do because I work long hours, and my wife came out of a not a violent home background, but poverty also. So it was in our natures to try to achieve, I think. And we just worked and worked and worked a lot. And it was time not to quite work those 70-hour weeks anymore.
The other extraordinary thing is that I don't know very many people who spend all their time together. You and your wife have spent virtually all of your time together for years.
It's... because I work at home as a writer, and very early in our married life, about a year and a half after, maybe 2 years after we were married, she made me the offer that she would support us for 5 years while I tried to make it as a writer, and I'd already sold some short stories and a couple of paperbacks. And then she said, if you can't make it in 5 years, you'll never make it. And I tried to negotiate it up to 7, but she's got Sicilian blood, so she was a lot smarter at negotiating than me. And... So from that moment on, I began working at home, and she, within a few years, was able to quit her job and go to work running the business side of my writing career. So we have spent, I would say, the last 40 years together every day, 7 days, 24/7 almost, except when she's out of the house or our offices are adjacent, and so we're always together.
Isn't that something? And so a dog is very much present, would be... not a disruption, but a huge change in your life.
Yeah, we worried about that a little, about, you know, we're as close, I think, as two human beings can get.
Right.
And I think we jealously guard our time with each other, even though we're together all the time. You don't always have the quality time. Some of it you're working a lot of that day. But and I think, in a sense, wondered, is this going to in any way come between us? But what it ended up doing, this wonderful dog, was bonding us together even closer in a different kind of family unit.
Yeah. Tell me the story. It's almost a mystical kind of encounter that you have. And I want to hear more about it, where you and Trixie are doing this staring match, and you talk to Trixie about
yes.
the fact that maybe she's an angel.
That was, we'd had her about 4 months, I think it was, and I just bonded to her very quickly. She was such a sweet, affectionate dog, and we played in the evening, in the winter when it got dark too early and you couldn't go out and play ball after 5 o'clock. Or on a rainy day, we'd play in the upstairs hall, and it was a long carpeted hall. And I could throw the ball, and she would go chasing it down the hall. And so we'd do that in the evening for a while. And then we'd end up with that, laying on the floor, staring into each other's eyes while I petted her. She was very unusual for a dog. She loved to just lay and stare into your eyes. She wouldn't look away. She'd never be the first to look away. One night I tried to see how long she would stare into your eyes, and when it hit 40 minutes, I began to get a little freaked out. But one night we were laying there, and I was stroking her side, and it's the way you talk to your dog, as if the dog understands what you're saying. And I said, you can't fool me. I know what you really are. And suddenly she raised her head and looked at me really intently, and it was just a little odd. And I thought that was amusing, though. I thought it was as if she knew what I said and reacted to it. And I said, you're not really just a dog. You're an angel. And she exploded to her feet and ran down the hall about 30 feet and turned and stared at me. And it was one of those moments where the hair goes up in the back of your neck. And I'm looking at her and thinking, now this can't be that she understood what I said or that she reacted to it, but what is she doing? And she never before or since did anything like that. And so when I tried to coax her to come forward, she backed even further away from me. And I had to finally just sit on the floor and let her come to me in her own time. And I told Jura this, and I said, I have no idea what to make about that, but it certainly was strange. And then throughout the years she was with us, we so frequently had people come up to us and say, this is a very special dog, including an Indian neighbor. It was a grandfather in a walker that we ran into every morning in our walks, who one day after a year of seeing Trixie and patting her head every morning, he said to me, do you know what your dog is? And I thought he meant the breed. And I said, yes, she's a golden retriever. He said, no, I mean what she really is. And he proceeded to tell me that explaining that in his faith there was reincarnation, and that when somebody had led a nearly perfect life as a human but not yet perfect, we're going to have to live another life as a human being. Often in between, live a life as a beautiful dog. And he said, your dog is somebody who's led an almost perfect life, and in the next life will be a perfect human being. And said, in your faith, you might say that you've been given stewardship of a holy soul.
Yeah.
So there were strange moments like that throughout our life with her. And considering that she utterly changed the way I write and so many things in my life, I do sometimes give credibility to all that.
So you think maybe she was an angel?
I think there was something more about her. I can't know what that is. I say in the book, I have no way of knowing what it is. It's the ineffable. It's that mysterious thing that if you open your heart to it, you see in life now and then, make you think the meaning and purpose of things are right in front of you if you could only see clearly. And that, I think, was the case with her. What she was other than a dog, I can never know, but I certainly know she had a very profound effect on my life.
Mm-hmm. How did she change your writing, Dean?
Well, this is hard to explain in a way, because I had always been a kid with, even though I came out of that bad background, I was never an unhappy kid. I was always happy. I always felt happiness was a choice. and felt that even as a little kid. And when things were really bad, and my father was particularly raging and carrying on, I would always look for something that made me happy. And very early on, that was books. And so I had grown up pretty much a happy guy. And but over the years, mostly through my business relationships and things like that, I was getting to lose my sense of wonder. I was getting a little cynical because of how many times somebody stabs you in the back, or how many betrayals as we go through in our lives. And I hadn't quite realized that I was getting cynical. And when Trixie came into our lives, I really had the revelation that watching her and her joy in things, I used to have a lot of that, and I didn't have as much of it anymore. And it made me stop and think, and watching her made me open my mind and heart to the world in a way that I hadn't for years. And it made me want to write things more ambitious than I had ever done before. And that became books like From the Corner of His Eye or One Door Away from Heaven. And before her, I would have never thought to tackle books that complex and that deep in their thematic subject. But I did. I wanted to do it in order to regain my sense of wonder, basically, that she had shown me I'd lost.
Oh, what a gift that was. Whew.
Yeah.
Dean Koontz, our guest this hour, and we're talking about his book, A Big Little Life, A Memoir of a Joyful Dog. It's a wonderful read. The dog's name is Trixie. And as Dean said, it changed his life. It changed his wife's life. It changed his writing. And Trixie actually became an author herself. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email address, you can feel free to send us one of those, is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dean Koontz, our guest, and we go to Scott from Lake Mills, our first caller. Hi, Scott.
Hi. I wanted to just first say that I, in my life, have kind of devoted my work to people with disabilities. I was a social worker in the disability advocacy field, and now I do medical massage therapy for adults with physical disabilities. So I wish that more of my clients had service dogs. Many of them have pets, which really have a profound effect on their lives. I also wanted to say that I, about 15 months ago, brought home a Bull Mastiff pup, and he has made a tremendous difference in my life and my kids' lives. He's a wonderful dog.
There's no bad dogs unless people make them bad. That's my philosophy.
Right. I just sense that he's such a good dog, and people will often say, "Oh, you've done such a wonderful job with him." And I don't take any credit for it. I think he's such a wonderful, empathetic dog. And there's a sense of real kindness in him. And I think we project a lot of our feelings and human traits onto dogs that may or may not be there, but when my oldest daughter, who has a lot of anxiety and some emotional issues, was upset a while ago, one night, and I couldn't really attend to her like I wanted to, when I went into her room to kind of tuck her in, Rufus, who is about 120 pounds now at 15 months, was on her bed, and he had one of his paws around her, and he was laying with her, and, she was sleeping, and he kind of looked up at me. And is this okay? Can I be on her bed? And I just kind of patted him, on the rump, and just kind of walked out and said he took care of her.
Oh,
so
I love his name too. I love the name Rufus for a dog. It's a good name. It's a good name.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep.
It's wonderful to hear those stories, isn't it? Because I'm sure you know exactly what he's talking about, and so do I.
Absolutely. In the book, I actually talk a little bit about how we're told by experts sometimes that dogs, we're projecting our feelings onto them, but I spend part of the book refuting that idea and say, It's a matter of looking very carefully at a dog, and not in a laboratory setting, but in a life setting, and watching them not just as if they were a pet, but as if they're a companion. And you will come to the realization that they share many of the same emotions we do, and it isn't projection. And we shouldn't feel strange that we say, oh, dogs love, dogs sorrow, dogs do all the things that we do, because they do.
Mm-hmm. Dogs love you, right, at one point, and I want you to tell us funny stories, to play the fool as part of the family. They're quite capable of recognizing the fool in us and of celebrating it with a joke now and then.
Yeah.
How did Trixie do that?
Well, she was, we were told when she came to us, she was the class clown at CCI, and her graduation picture really sealed that. There's about 14 or 16 of these dogs lined up in a semicircle in the picture, and all of them are sitting tall and very proud, holding their own leash for the picture, so that they clearly are assistance dogs who've been through a big training. And the last one on the end is sitting there with one leg thrown out to the side, burying her belly and her head cocked to one side, grinning and her leash laying on the floor, and that is Trixie. That sort of summed up her personality. She would she had a game she played with us that it took us the longest time to realize it was a game, that she would suddenly get down on the floor and look under a piece of furniture that was sitting up on short legs and be very alert. And the first time it happened, I thought, uh-oh, a mouse or something.
Ooh, yeah.
She got something trapped under there, and she would paw under it and try to reach it. So we'd get ready, we're going to have to see what it is, and get down on the floor and look under with a flashlight, and there's nothing there. And the first time I thought, oh, it must have run away. And she got away with this for 20 or 30 times, and after she'd get us down on the floor to look under, then she'd stand up and she'd stand grinning at us and wagging her tail. And it took me the longest time to figure out, this is a joke. She's having fun with us. And when we wouldn't do it anymore, she started getting other people with it. Somebody come to visit, and she'd insist on going right up to the first piece of furniture nearest them and doing this thing and then looking at them, and they'd all fall for it. So it was just one of many things she did. She had quite a little sense of humor of her own.
She sure did. Tell us a story about Al, the doll.
Oh, wow.
That's a great story.
I tell it at much greater length in the book, but we had an assistant, Elaine, who she was coming up on retirement, and she had, over the years, everybody just loved Elaine. It was her personality, but we used to joke that every man in her life that she had ever seen, dated, or whatever, always continued to be in love with Elaine. And as I said, she broke hundreds of geriatric hearts, but she had this suitor. His name was Al, and Al just fell for her and wanted to marry her. And Elaine said, "Al, I'm coming up on retirement, and I've got my she was a widow, and she had had my own family and everything, and I don't want marriage anymore." And he said, he kept trying to pursue her and pursue her and pursue her. And finally, at desperation, he sent her this Billy Ray Cyrus doll dressed up as a cowboy. And when you squeezed the doll, it sang, it had a recording of Billy Ray Cyrus singing "My Achy Breaky Heart." And Elaine's friends just all thought this was hilariously tacky. And so one night we went to Elaine's house for dinner, a bunch of us who knew her, and it's Elaine's nature. She kept saying, "I don't know why that roast isn't cooking." And we were supposed to eat at 7:30. Well, somewhere around 9 o'clock, Elaine discovered that the reason it wasn't cooking is she didn't have the oven on. So the dinner was very late, and we were having wine with it. We were all in a pretty good mood. And she had invited Trixie because she worked here, and she knew how good a dog Trixie was. So Trixie would always go through people's houses and sniff up every room to make sure what was in it, but she never touched anything in anybody's house, never caused any kind of problem. And we were all sitting around the table, finally sitting down to dinner at some ungodly hour, and somebody said in the midst of, we finally started eating, somebody said, "So, Elaine, have you heard from Al recently? And from under the table at that precise moment came my achy, breaky heart, my achy, and Trixie had gotten that doll down, taken it under the table, and we didn't even know she was there with it. And now it's very happenstance that she should squeeze that doll with her mouth and trigger the song at the precise moment it would have been funny. And that's one of those really strange things I wonder about this dog.
Oh, my gosh. That's such a wonderful story. And it's such a wonderful story that I was thinking there's a book in all of that. There's a book in Elaine and those brokenhearted geriatric hearts. There really is, Gene, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. In fact, Elaine's telling everybody now after she read the advance, hey, he wrote a book and I'm the star of it.
She and Al is too. Yeah. Thanks, Scott, very much for your call. We go next to Barbara from Wausau. Hi, Barbara.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you today?
Fine. How are you, Barbara?
I'm enjoying this so just tremendously. Thanks, Dean. And it brought to mind an experience I just wanted to share real quick. About 18 years ago, we were going through a really, really rough time in our lives with our family and feeling really down. And I would go to the local Humane Society to visit the dogs there just to feel some companionship. And one day I walked in, there was a little white dog that just jumped up and hugged me. Perfect little dog. And the people said, we don't know where he came from. He's fully trained, just delightful. So we decided to take him home. And it was delightful to hear you talk, Dean, about Trixie, because this was what Harley was like. He was just, people would say, this is not a dog. This is more than a dog. And he was delightful and very human-like. And the experience that we had was there was something this dog had to offer us, a gift. And we had him for about a year and a half. And what was tremendous about it was I was learning, as I listened to, we really learned, it brought joy in our life again. I learned to love in a new way. I learned to enjoy the childish joy that comes with the animal. And I realize now, many years later, that that dog came into our life to prepare us for an unexpected surprise, because our young daughter had unexpectedly gotten pregnant, and we were more than welcome and ready to welcome a grandchild. And the day that our grandchild was born, we got home from the hospital. It had been a long, long day at the hospital, waiting for her to be born, C-section. We got home, and our beloved little white dog was dead.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was absolutely heartbreaking. But I've come over the years to realize, when you mentioned that gentleman saying that sometimes we are given the chance to walk with souls that are coming into the world, it was such a profound experience that that dog helped us to prepare with loving hearts for something that we never would have, the idea we wouldn't have welcomed, but we did, because that dog prepared the way. And our granddaughter is 18. She's absolutely gorgeous. And the delight and joy of our life. And my goodness, what we can be given. So I thank you so much for this show and the opportunity to share that.
Thank you, Betsy.
Thank you. That's lovely.
Yeah.
And that's part of what I say in the book. I say to, you know, if we look at the animal in our life, not as pets, but as companions, as members of the family, and fully include them with things, it's a much richer experience, and it can be an awakening experience of a very high order.
I know you're not terribly fond of doing press interviews, and you've been pushed to do so with many of your books, and I loved your comments about radio, of course, but I was interested in the story when CNN came to do a show on you, and Trixie was involved, and also then they stayed because they were captivated by the work of the Canine Companions for Independence.
Yes, of course, they do pre-interview on the phone tell you the kind of things they're looking for when they bring a whole crew for a couple of days and do this. And they said, your lives are kind of sedentary, and we need some color. So what colorful things do you do? And I sort of basically said, you know, we've kind of tried to stay away from colorful things. I don't go hang gliding, and I don't do anything that I put myself at risk. I sit at a keyboard, so outside of years of ballroom dancing lessons, haven't done anything of any color at all, and we're very much homebodies. And they were a little disappointed in that because they needed the TV, the colorful kind of stuff, and they said, well, could you walk on the beach and you could do this, and just to give us different backgrounds and things. And then I said, oh, well, you know, there is this thing we do that I think you might find pretty colorful, and I told them about Canine Companions, and producer said, I don't know, people in wheelchairs and a bunch of dogs, I don't see anything very interesting about that. And so he agreed to go to CCI for an hour on the second day, and instead they spent the largest part of the day there, and they ended up doing a whole separate show. It was a Christmas program about CCI, and that was quite wonderful. And Trixie had been with us only a week at that time, I think, and they were so impressed with how well-behaved we were, although it was a moment when we went back to CCI, and Trixie was with us, and they wanted to get some footage of me meeting a bunch of puppies that were currently about 11 weeks old and just about to go out to their puppy raisers for the next 16 months. And they put me in the kennel and opened all the kennel doors at once, and, probably two dozen furball golden retrievers came exploding out of all these doors. And I looked like I was wearing a puppy coat. They just clung all over me. And Trixie watched this, saw this happen inside the thing, and turned her back to it and refused to look any further. And it was quite amusing. It was like, look, I've only been here a few days, and already you're cavorting with other puppies.
Let's go. Thanks, Barbara, so much for the call. Betsy is next from River Falls. Hi, Betsy.
Hi. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Mr. Koontz, you have delightfully scared me often and often and often, and so now I can tell a scary story about a cat I had named Alexis, who was a loving, wonderful cat, but who hated art. And I have lots of art on my walls and around, and she would try and knock everything down. And one morning, she was lying on my chest, and I was patting her, and I said, you know, sometimes I think you're the reincarnation of Savonarola. And she reared back and with open claws hit me across the face and then lay down on my chest and looked at me like, are you ever going to mention that again? And I said, oh, no. No, sirree, Bobcat, you want to be Savonarola? That's okay with me. So, you know, you never can tell what's going to happen. So thank you very, very much for the show, and I'm going to go run out and buy your book. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
A cat who hates art, huh? I guess.
People often ask me why I don't write cats more into books, because I've only done it a couple times. They say, do you hate cats? No, actually, I like cats very much, but I have such an allergy to them that if I enter a house where there's a cat, I go into anaphylactic shock.
Oh, my gosh.
I have to give myself epinephrine injections in the thigh and get to a hospital. So,
oh, my gosh.
So I like cats, but they all try to kill me, so I don't write about them.
I can understand why. Thanks, Betsy, very much for your wonderful call. Ruth is next from Madison. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, good morning. I'm allergic to mammals, so I don't have mammals myself. I've got parrots, mostly unadoptable, and they, you know, they're old, insane, or missing body parts, or incorrigibly nasty. But I do have some dog stories from friends. But what I appreciate the most about dogs is how they find the joy in the moment, and they just are, it seems like, forever in the moment, with the exception of when they're mourning, like the loss of another dog or the loss of an owner or something. But you know, like, for example, if a dog has to undergo an amputation, they, you know, like, they wake up out of the anesthetic and it's time to get them up, and they try to walk like they always used to walk, and then they find they can't do that, and it's like, oh, darn. And so then they get up and they find another way, stump, 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 away they go. And it's like they never think of it again. And they never have, you know, like there's any body image problems. They don't know, little dogs don't know how little they are. They'll march right up to the biggest dog, and big dogs don't know how big they are. They'll just try and climb up on your lap, but they just find the joy in the moment. And if we were projecting our feelings onto dogs, like you were talking about people saying to you, wouldn't that be horrible?
Yeah, it's we don't have to project ours on. They've got it all right. They have all the same emotions, but what you said is something I get to in the book too. Dogs are, unlike us, innocent. They are innocent. They will be innocent all their lives, and therefore they have a real grasp of what's important in life, and it's one of the things they have to teach us. And I think they're stoic. I mentioned that in my book, that Trixie went through numerous operations, including a spinal, and this dog, I never heard her whimper. I never heard a complaint. She got depressed one time because she had 6 weeks of restraint after her surgery, and about 4 week mark, she was thinking, this is enough. Mm-hmm. So she got a little depressed, but they're game for anything, and we have a lot to learn by watching them.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call. And you do see some extraordinary things in the book, Dean. This is a big thing to say about anything in life. Of all the agents of this world that have changed me for the better, this dog takes second place only to Jerdy, your wife, and she brought as much to your wife as to you. That's an extraordinary thing to say about a dog.
Yeah, it is. It's, so many people who met her here and it came. It's like I have a couple of friends in New York I went to college with, and we still in touch. And they came here and stayed for a week, and they went home and they told me in a phone call, gee, you know, we try to tell people about Trixie and things she did when we were there and so forth. And they just, their eyes glaze over, and we realize there's no way to quite tell what she's like. And I say in the book, I kind of, the ineffable is ineffable because it can't be described. So I ran up against that wall at various times, but I've hoped I've done her justice by showing how in some ways she changed my life. But a lot of it has to do with keeping your mind and your heart open to the idea that you don't know everything about the world, but the world is deeply mysterious. And if you live that way, your life is full of more wonder, and in a relationship with an animal, you begin to see much more if you live that way than you do if you're closed down to the possibility of mystery and wonder.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Let's go to Tim from Madison. Hi, Tim.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
My daughter and son-in-law have a black lab by the name of Riggs, and my son-in-law and granddaughter and grandson are both type 1 diabetic. And in the evening when everybody was sound asleep, Riggs would automatically know if one of them had low blood sugar. And he'd jump up on their bed, and he would bark and nudge them with their nose, with his nose, until what they did is until they woke up, got up, got the blood meter out, checked their blood, and found out that what they had to do is they had to eat something in order to raise their blood sugar. And it happened on more than one occasion, and it's happened to all three of them.
I absolutely know that is the way it was, because dogs are uncanny in their perceptions of things, and what we can't, just on their sense of smell alone, we can't understand how different their understanding of the world is from ours. My friend Bonnie Bergen, who founded the idea of service dogs beyond for the blind, there were only before Bonnie service dogs for the blind, she has been teaching dogs just amazing things. And one of them, you may even have seen this in the paper some places, has been teaching dogs to smell cancer in people.
Yes.
And she's had real success with it. They've done studies where the dogs single out, this person has cancer, this, and then they track those people. In these cases, these were people who did not seem to have anything. And out of the ones they track, every one a dog says has cancer, even though it won't show up in any test. it will manifest within a year or two, and the ones they say don't, doesn't manifest. Now, what doctors have said to her, this is fascinating, but how does it help us? Because we don't, the dog says this one, but we can't find anything. And so now what she's doing is teaching dogs to smell different types of cancer and react to it, and so that they can say to the doctor, this person has imminent lung cancer or imminent pancreatic, and catch it at a much earlier stage because of dogs. Now, where that ultimately goes, who knows, but it's a fascinating thing to contemplate.
It sure is. More phone calls for Gene Kuntz in a moment. We're talking about his latest book, A Big Little Life, A Memoir of a Joyful Dog. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Best-selling author Gene Kuntz is our guest this hour, and we're talking about his latest book, which is about his he and his wife's longtime angel companion, Trixie. 800-486-8655. I want to spend just a few more minutes because I know that this is an important cause to you, and it's where you got Trixie and you continue to give to this organization, the Canine Companions for Independence. Tell me, are there a lot of programs nationally, Dean, and are there a lot of people with physical disabilities who would like to get dogs and there aren't enough dogs? Or I just am interested in the status of all of that.
Well, there's a number of organizations that do this work. I think CCI is really sets a sterling standard for how the dogs are not only trained, but they follow up with them. They visit the people, make sure the dogs are still on their training and that everything is all right, and they have support groups. We have at the Oceanside Center down here in Oceanside, the one we're involved with. There's five CCI centers around the country. And down here we have the Trixie Fund, which pays catastrophic medical bills for the dogs for people with disabilities who can't pay for them themselves. And they just have all kind of programs like that. And it's a wonderful group. And what the dogs do for people is sort of... I mentioned a book, a friend, Tom Hollenstein, who was on the board of the Oceanside Center, who, when he was 24, was in a catastrophic off-road biking accident and ended up, he has some slight use of hands and whatnot, but largely quadriplegic, and he's a big, handsome guy, 24. It's a life changer for sure, and he ends up back at home with his parents, but Tom's a self-motivated guy, and he heard about CCI, and he looked into it and said, I want one of those dogs. And he got on the program, and he ended up with a dog named Weaver. And Weaver was with him a long time, and mainstream Tom. Tom was able then to leave his parents' house, live on his own. He got a job, and he does everything. He doesn't let anything hold him back. And when he lost Weaver, he now has another dog. But when he lost Weaver, he said that if he had had the choice either to never have had the accident or to have had it and met Weaver, he would take meeting Weaver.
Ooh.
Now, that is an amazing statement about, and Tom's not a guy to make stuff up. He thought that relationship was so profound that it was worth what he went through, what he still goes through, to have had it.
Woo. Isn't that saying
something?
Isn't
that amazing?
That is amazing. Let's go to Sharon from Duluth. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I have a story about a wonderful little dog named Martha. A homeless man was in a drop-in center. A dear friend of mine is a custodian at a local church, and the minister was down doing a Bible study at this drop-in center, and a homeless guy came in with this little dog, pretty kind of matted up and have fleas and Lyme's disease and stuff like that, but you could tell he really liked her. He had offered to take her when a family he knew had to move to a place that they couldn't have pets, and he had been trying to keep her, but he finally said to the pastor there that it was just becoming too difficult since he didn't live anywhere specifically, and he said maybe some member of your church would want to take her. And she was just a darling little dog, but kind of messy by then, living out on the streets for a while. And my dear friend had been talking to me for a couple of years about really wanting a dog, and I had just said to him a few times, you know, that's a nice idea, but you don't have health insurance, you just barely get by, you really can't afford a dog, you know, that's kind of too bad. But So the pastor brought the dog up to the church, and the dog kept running away downstairs to where my friend was working, and, you know, he would bring her back up to the office, and she would keep seeking him out. So finally, that night, I got a call from him, and he says, well, guess what I got? And I thought, oh, crap, you got a dog. Because I just thought, you really can't afford a dog, you know. And I went over and met the dog, and I thought, well, it's cute, you know. But just a short time later, he became very ill with a flu and was in bed bound for a couple of weeks. And he asked if I would take the dog. Well, that was it. I don't know that I have ever been more in love in my life. I loved my children, but this dog is just miraculous. And of course, this good friend of mine, I think, has a lot of health problems and depression problems and so forth. And I know this dog has just been a little miracle for him. But after having her, taking care of her for about 2.5 weeks, I thought, you know, this is a waste of good dog time when he's at work. And so I take her to work with me 2 days a week. I take her to choir practice. And I work at a food shelf where a lot of people are coming and going and children and so forth. And she is the greeter for the food shelf, practically. If there's a mob of kids, I kind of get her into my office. But if there's just a few, and she will run down the hall with a smile. She actually smiles at the people that she knows, the volunteers that come in and stuff, you know, the ones that she knows and likes best. She gets this little, like, grin on her face. I take her to choir practice with me, too. And she goes around and greets everyone, and then we're sitting down and practicing. And then when the choir director tells us all to stand, she'll stand up then.
That's right.
But the other little sidebar is, this was a long time ago, but my 14-year-old daughter was died in a car accident.
Oh.
And once in a while, because this is a little girl dog, I just think, I think this is a little gift for my daughter sometimes, just a love package that reminds me of her, too. Mm. Just the most wonderful, dear, friendly little thing. Mm. So,
quite a story.
Yeah, there's just wonder in them. So many things.
Yes, there is wonder in them.
Yes,
how true.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you.
These stories are something. I'm going to sit here sobbing all day. the other thing is, though, and tell me how you deal with this, is that their deaths can hit so hard. And I know you were devastated by Trixie's loss. And in the scheme of time, we don't have them for very long, do we?
No, I write about loss in the book, and it's the fact that we're mortal, and that's the key thing. The key bad thing about mortality, you're going to lose everything you love eventually.
Yes.
That's the way life is. And it can be just hammering. When we lost Trixie, I had never had writer's block in my life. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of the Energizer Bunny of fiction. I just keep moving. And I lost her. I had 5 weeks of absolute writer's block. I couldn't get one word out. And I was in the middle of a book, The Darkest Evening of the Year, that was full of golden retrievers. And it was just to write about them was just excruciating. And I was so astonished by the depth of grief, and my wife was the same. And finally, I had to finish the book by telling myself it was a tribute to her, which in a way it was. And I've said to other people who lose animals that somebody said to me, I'm ashamed to say this. This was a few months after we lost Trixie, but I have had suffered worse grief from losing a dog I loved than from people I loved. She was embarrassed by this, and I said, there's nothing to be embarrassed by that, because every human relationship, no matter how wonderful it is, has some problematic quality, because we're humans, we're all flawed, and a relationship with a wonderful dog can be almost perfect, and also, you're with a dog almost all the time, unless you go to work and whatnot, but your experience is such that it's ideal, and so the pain can be really excruciating. And there's nothing wrong with that. Loss is loss.
Right. And so I have to ask you what everybody asks you, I'm sure. There will be another?
There is a new dog. It took us...
Oh, there is a new dog.
Yeah, it took us 8 months because we just just couldn't get over the loss. But at the end of 8 months, CCI had been saying, we have other release dogs, you know. So we, at the end of 8 months, I called up Linda Valiant at CCI, and I said, look, we'll be ready in about 2 months, I think, to have another dog. So at 10 months, they brought this little female golden to us, Anna. Well, it was Ariana, but that's just too much for a dog's name, so we changed it to Anna. And she came to us, and she's a smaller golden, and about 52 pounds, and she was just beautiful and totally different than Trixie. Each one is their own personality, just like human beings. But in terms of her loving, quality of loving and everything, that is very much the same. And we fell for her right away, and she came into our lives, and she was very special. And then CCI was putting together her adoption papers for us and her background. And to their great surprise, they discovered when they got her adoption papers all set up and her heritage, her Anna's grandfather was Trixie's litter.
Oh, my gosh.
So we have Trixie's grandniece. And this is an astonishing thing because the breeders who provide for this program are spread over about 15 states.
Amazing, Dean. And on that note, we have to end. We're out of time. Yeah. Thank you so much for being with us. Thanks for writing the book. Dean Koontz, the book is A Big Little Life, A Memoir of a Joyful Dog. I didn't even know they had another dog. That's quite a story. Okay, thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing yet another wonderful dog-loving show, and to Rhonda as well for on-air production. Be with you again on Monday for All Things Political here on the Ideas Network.